This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1971. This program forms part of the Langara College Real History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part in any form without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is Early Man in North America, including British Columbia. The speaker is Fraser Taylor. The audience consists of students at Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus.
And his background is mainly in the city, anthropology in Prairie and Plain Creek, and regular work in Alberta, while he's adapted to the BC climate and was prepared to talk about early man in British Columbia.
It's kind of nice to try. I'll get to as Jerry said, most of my work has been in the northern eastern woods. And I'm not that familiar with the BC situation, trying to catch up desperately. But with the very complex development of BC Indian culture, you just don't catch up overnight. It's a fascinating situation, and it's a situation which we are attempting to understand, but so many changes came so abruptly as the Europeans moved into the situation, it's very difficult for them to understand what it was before. Now, Jerry asked me to comment rather briefly on some theories as to where the American Indians came from or how they originated. And I find this particularly important here, because I find that many people have some rather unusual ideas. Well, there's only one of the theories which have been discarded long before, and the way that it's accumulated to show something else in the situation. I'm sure many of you have heard of the theory, perhaps some of you have too. The theory that we do have that the American Indians are most closely related to the Asian people, particularly Northeast Asian people, is also a theory, but it has a greater weight of evidence supporting it than the situation of other theories. You can find many texts today in my voice is gone on Jerry. I see Jerry waving at me. My voice is appearing. I don't have the world's strongest voice as we did. Now you did it. You interrupted my train of thought. You will find many popular books on the American Indians which do present many of these theories. And unfortunately, they're not up to date, but many have been so popular in the past that they're constantly reprinted. Such things as the American Indians are most closely related to the Australian Aborigines. And yet, in this case, you're talking about people who are on the opposite side of the globe, and there is no explanation to how Australian Aborigines managed to get here to this continent and become American Indians in the transition. Judging by the radiocarbon dates that we do have, the American Indians have been here for a much longer period of time than what we suspected up until recently. And on top of this, the dates also show us that the American Indians got here before boats were invented. And it's a long swim from Australia. So we look instead towards the land bridge situation. It's very easy to pick up resemblance, specifical resemblance, between any two groups of people. And many of these theories are based on this, for instance, about the single point of evidence connecting, and here's evidence of the face mark, evidence connecting Australian Aborigines and American Indians is that there is good ground which developed. Now, this is true of many peoples around the world, but the weakest point of evidence that you can lay your hands on. On top of that, the American Indians all don't have considerable brow development. Now, here's the weakest theory of all, and this is just about the sole point of evidence that we've based on. Yes, it is pointed to rather frequently as being still a legitimate theory. There's no other point of evidence that really stands up at all. Even this one doesn't stand up under close scrutiny. Most, when I came to BC here, a few years ago, I found that in my cultural and physical courses that people frequently mentioned a couple of books about the lost time of the moon, Atlantis, this sort of situation, and I found when I went down to the bookstore, our bookstore here, but there's several copies and several editions of this type of literature. Now, it is literature, it's very interesting reading, but it is not scientific at all. Regarding the lost continent of Atlantis, this cropped up, this idea that there was a lost continent called Atlantis seems to crop up about 2,000 years ago with one of the Greek philosophers, and he happened to mention in one of his writings that somewhere to the west is the lost continent, and that it had gone under the sea. And he called it Atlantis. Now, the location of this continent at this time was thought to be west of the, the Pillars of Hercules. Now, this is a geographic feature which supposedly gives us the location of this lost continent, which supposedly connected the Old World and the New World. Now, today, the people who describe this theory feel that the lost, or the Pillars of Hercules refer to the Rock of Gibraltar. And this is, of course, what the continent of Atlantis and the Atlantic Ocean. Now, looking back in the old literature, we find that it doesn't necessarily refer to the Rock of Gibraltar at all. It refers to several of the geographic features throughout the Mediterranean area. Now, there is a measure of truth in this. That there was, quite possibly, a fairly complexly developed type of culture that was probably within the Mediterranean area. Now we find in North Africa, for instance, that there are roads that go up to sea and go under. And you know about roads, they go someplace, and presumably there's a city at the end of it, or quite possibly what. And this is probably the origin of the lost continent, the Atlantic situation. And the same sort of thing applies to the continent of the moon. As I say, these are not scientific theories, but they are very popular, and the average person when he reads these things doesn't know or can't pick up which is science and which is literature. And we have all kinds of these books around that are commonly reprinted. Going along with this idea, we look at the American Indian civilization as it existed in Mesoamerica, and we like to pick up certain characteristics of that development and compare them back to Egypt, the Middle Kingdom. Very commonly, you find theorists feeding on the pyramid situation in Mesoamerica and saying that American Indians got this idea from perhaps the Egyptians or somebody else in that area. Now, if you are going to build a monumental structure, and it seems that most people living under urban conditions do start building large structures at various times, there are only so many forms that you can develop. One of them is a pyramid. We find that pyramids are not restricted to Egypt or Mesopotamia. We find them, as I say, in Mesoamerica. We also find them in Japan, prehistorically. And it would appear that with the Mesoamerican situation, that they probably came up with the idea of independence. Certainly, they used it for two different things. The Egyptians, the Mesopotamians, used them as burial chambers for the royal, which is the primary situation. That was the reason for being. The Mesoamericans It was used as a religious structure. The ceremony was carried out on top, and in only a couple of cases do these pyramids actually contain water. So there's a different context involved at all. And if there had been context, you'd expect to find all kinds of other cultural similarities between the two, but they just aren't there. No questions? 5 minutes. Very commonly, and many of our religious groups have this idea that the American Indians are descendants of the lost tribes of Israel. Now, by the Bible, and the dating that we're able to do via the Bible, it appears that the lost tribes that they're referring to became lost as they wandered out of the area in which the Bible is being written, wandered out somewhere between 2,000 and 6,000 years ago. Now again, we have carbon 14 dates on this continent, which suggests that the American Indians have been here much longer than this. But it is a popular idea among some of our Christian sects. More recently, we have the Thor Heyerdahl books on teaching. The possibility of being suggested that the American Indians are descendants of Polynesians, so Heyerdahl hasn't gone the other way, actually, but some people see them as having come across this way. Again, the evidence that we do have suggests that while there are probably some contact between the Polynesians and the American Indians, it is a comparatively recent thing within, for instance, over the last 1,000 years, something like this. So, there is a physical similarity of some Polynesians to some American Indians. Again, you can find similarities wherever you look at these people. Now, as I say, and we'll look at some of the early sites, not only here in the continent, but in some of the social homes in D.C. here, the evidence also suggests that the strongest connections are with the Asian people, particularly the Northeast Asian people. It's based on, admittedly, some very general characteristics. But when the weight of the evidence suggests this situation, then it begins to make sense. There are certain other evidence which is not related to man, which suggests the same thing, that there was a land contact between the two continents, that man may be so and animal may be so, not human animal. Now, the general Asian characteristics are this. There is a fairly high incidence of what we call shovel-shaped incisors, the Asian people and the American Indians. Now, this is a very generalized psychophysical characteristic that's not restricted to these two groups of people at all, but it's more common found. And a shovel-shaped incisor looks rather like this. If you're able to yank out your front incisor and take a look at it, look down at it, and if you have a shovel-shaped incisor, you'd find that it's curled around like this. Most of us here today will have straight ones like this. Just one of these parts is a variation of the human being. They're quite variable as a species. Here's one type that seems more common sound than two distinct groups, American Indians and AGI people. They all have, I should say they all have, but there is a high, very high incidence of long, straight, black hair. Now again, this is not confined to the Asian people or the American Indians, but it is most common found among these two people. There's a high incidence of brown eyes. These are just gross physical characteristics. There's also a high incidence of what is called the Mongolian spot. And this is just a little birthmark situation down here in the Asian spine. Usually passes on a few years or before. But it is there, and again, it's a possible situation. Now, these are broad physical characteristics and just suggest these possibilities. Looking at other types of evidence, we can look at a non-human animal, hopefully find it. During the Pleistocene, I think Aaron Allman has talked about this, but there was an interchange of animals, non-human animals, between the two continents. The similarities in the fauna, these animal types, are strong between the Americas and those animal types found in Northeast Asia and into Eurasia. Now, camels and horses have originated here on this continent, but they're apparently able to transfer themselves and migrate across into the old world. Coming the other way were such animals as bison, mammoth, elk, deer, and so forth. Now again, this is just common in the land, raised across the situation. And if the animals are common in Eurasia, this is very much what we're saying. Well, let me talk a bit about it, please, to that question. Is there any evidence for domesticated animals? The transfer of domesticated animals across? No.
I understood that the only domesticated animal we could have in the Mexico period of time was a dog.
Yeah, and as far as we can tell, the American Indian dog, tracing it back in the archaeological past. Was of a fairly distinctive type. Now, they got here, presumably, before the dog was domesticated. And it appeared that the dog itself came across the land bridge also. Now, whether it was a wolf in this condition or a wild dog, we're not sure. Apparently it came across, but presumably before domestication. The earliest evidence we have for a domesticated dog, this one goes back to something like 9,000-10,000 years. The archaeological evidence that we have of the American Indians being here is some order of 14,000 years plus. So it appears, this is a probability again, that it was a wild creature at that time that came across. Yeah.
What did they found
there in
the
We're having a hard time finding the remains of people, but we're finding artifacts. Farther back in time you get, the less is the chance of finding home. Okay, well here's the problem. We got two theories. One that man got, this is the current archaeology right now, that man got here on the order of something like 14,000 years ago. Came in right at the tail end of the glaciation. Second theory is that man got here much earlier than this. And this is part of the problem. We're trying to determine exactly when he got here. Now, these two theories can be current for this reason. The sites that we do have, which suggest a greater antiquity than this, have all been questioned on some grounds or another. In other words, not all archaeologists will accept them as being evidence of human habitation. And this is one of the driving problems in American archaeology, to try and get a good site. Back sometime in the past. I'll give you a couple of examples here of what we're up against. There's a site down in Texas called the Lewisville site, which was excavated. And, well, initially a bulldozing job there building a reservoir for a dam. And they uncovered what appeared to be a little campfire. Burned charcoal. And they thought, well, here's a pretty good situation. It would indicate man being the only type of creature that makes a campfire. So they got a radiocarbon date on it, and the dating was good. They had an ample sample, and there were no problems. And they got a couple of dates on several different carbons, actually, little fireplaces. And they got dates ranging from 33,000 years ago to about 37,000 years ago. Now, it appears that, Barry gave you the proper sequence of events here. During the course of excavation, one of these cars, there was uncovered the projectile form. Now, this is dandy. Here you get an artifact. And it's a very special type of artifact. It's specific type of projectile plane. It's a landfill, it's fairly large, and she's included on one of those sides. And by the plating techniques and so forth, you know that it wasn't made by nature, though nature can do marvelous things on the land. Rock doesn't look like artifact. So in this case, it's a very specific type of point. Now, the problem here is that we have, at this time, several other sites which had total points, but the date is all on this order, all 14,000 years. So this is what it looked like. Here we have a part, 33,000, 37,000 years, something like this, with a projectile point, which seemed to be only about 12, 14,000 years old. And subsequent investigations determined that somebody had snuck in one night and had planted it. And when this had happened, then the whole site was in question. Incidentally, this is why we like to keep archaeological sites as quiet as possible. We don't like to broadcast where they are until the work is done. Because people do these sorts of things for all kinds of reasons. And if you do happen to know where an archaeological dig is taking place, we would appreciate it if you don't spread the information around. We'd like to keep it quiet as possible until the last possible moment. Myself, I've had all kinds of problems with the place once they became known. So anyway, it's unfortunate. Instead, there are a couple of other stone items in this site which could have been filled, but on the other hand, nature could have created them also. In this case, it was a pebble which had been placed over most of both sides. It looked like a sort of crude cutting tool. But as I say, nature could have created this sort of thing. It does happen on occasion. Yeah.
When native Pentecostals
in
the language
into
America, did they bring
any
common wisdom, these artifacts that are similar to
Asia? Right. This is a key point in the people that hold this theory, the man has been here much longer than this, point to some of these early sites. And even though the dating may be questioned, we have all kinds of the dating may be non existent in some cases. We do have sites that show a preponderance of three types of tools, what we call a blade, what we call a burin, what we call a bisect. And this has been called the pre-projectile point. And these people feel, and I happen to belong to school of thought, I would say, that the American Indians came here before stone projectile points had been invented or developed and such. And they came here with these three stone items in their cultural inventory. And we do find many sites which appear to be very early with these types of tools. Now, stone projectile points were developed in the old world something less than 50,000 years ago. Apparently, of course, well, man was a big game, but he wasn't using stone projectiles. He probably had a fire hardened spear. It was made of wood. He just take all the fire hardened to get them out of the way. They don't have any stone projectiles, no? So something a little less than 50,000 years ago. Now, here's the American Indian, some of the world's best big game hunters at this time. And if there had been stone projectile points around, they, in all probability, they would have brought them with them. And they would have had the idea. And if you don't find it, it would be very interesting thing.
Would stone projectile points developed in Asia?
No, the earliest positive evidence that we have for it is with the Neanderthal tool assemblage. And in this case, it's a rather crude triangular type of thing, but plate. And this is the earliest possible evidence that we have.
What
area
was that
found? There was one found in Kanagar Cave over in Iraq. And at about the same time, as there are some things found in Asia.
So here's what we got.
Then, this is true. The American Indians left just before stolen projectile points can be embedded, stored, or developed. This means that they came with something that was supposed to be done years ago. Blades two weren't developed much farther back in time. Matter of fact, they're about 50,000 years. Well, that's the theory. Yeah.
And they have fact that you did not have the condition, the human, or in fact, you do need for religion for yourself?
No, we feel that religion is quite well developed at this time, but as I say, there is a dirt, or I should say, there is not very many of them, right? But all we have left are stone tools. And there are no stone figurines, for instance, or anything like that. No, nothing like that. Now, right now, there's a cut down.
The Wall American Indians have a common ancestor.
That? Well, there's different theories.
Like, are they go over different times?
Yeah, I think the most commonly held theory is that after the initial movement of the people into the continent, there were perhaps only two more migrations. The second one of which came down perhaps through the mountains area here to North America. And the third one involved people which later became Eskimo. The American Indian is very diverse and precise, actually. And you might suspect that there were several, perhaps dozens, of waves of immigration here. It's possible. But we don't have to lean on that kind of explanation for it, because we've been here long enough to develop all kinds of physical variations. Yep.
The Eskimo are more recent migration. They came here, depending on the archaeological record, something like 6,000 to 8,000 years ago, in other words, comparatively recent.
But the Jura people, of course, were traversed through, well, a similar region anyway. The evidence of their passage would have been destroyed by glaciation. Getting back to this theory here, that if the American Indians came here on the border something like 50,000 years ago, we've got problems because, as you know, as Arnie told you, this continent has been subjected to glaciation. I imagine Arnie told you about the Bering Strait situation. Thank you, Deputy. It becomes a very complex sort of thing. While you've got glaciation, you can't get across the ice. There's over 1,000 miles of ice to get across before you go back to get lunch. Or you've got to wait until it opens. So, judging by the geological evidence, the continent was closed by ice. 14,000 to apparently about 22,000 years ago. Ice. And then from about, something like 35,000 years ago, 22,000 to about 35,000 years ago, talking about ice free. You know, 35,000 to 50, perhaps 1,000, we're not too sure. Things are getting up a little tight again, our knowledge isn't that long ago, I guess. Now, again, we got ice. Now, the theory is simple. When there was an ice age, land bridge was being exposed, the Bering Strait. It would only take a drop of something like 150-200 feet of sea level to expose the land area above almost 1,000 miles away. This land area would have been a dandy field game situation. The rolling plains, the lush vegetation, and so forth. Siberia, apparently, was never meant to be glaciated. Just on the mountaintop. There were all kinds of people, apparently, in that area. So when the continent was ice free, when there was an ice age, for the people living in Siberia, And you often have this one under control. No way thought of could be a game situation. It doesn't take much stretch of imagination to fix the people being quite ready to move out on my under spirit. Up to the central last. Now, I couldn't get any farther because the lights were there on. Now, when the ice melts, both the land is underwater. And what you have, essentially, are people trapped in the lava. You can't get back or to the Asia again. But on the other hand, the whole country is totally open up. And the diamond comes. So this is the idea behind the theory of these archaeologists who believe that the Indians, or the ancestors of the Indians, have been here much longer than 12, 14,000 years. I'll give you a couple of sites here to give you an example of what's involved here. Incidentally, there are a couple of sites going right now which have carbon 14 dates on the order of somewhere 20, 30,000 years ago, but they haven't been fully recorded yet. So I can't give you final information on them, but I can tell you about a couple of these other sites here in Canada in particular. We had a dandy site cropped up about 2 years ago near Saskatoon. Now, they were excavating for gravel for housing development. They got down below this glacial sill, and they found what appeared to be three artifacts, three little stone tools. And fortunately, they got two radiocarbon dates. Now, the situation was like this. Here's the gravel surface, and here is glacial sill. Then they found a sort of a sand level, and then underneath they found another glacial sill. So what this looks like is an interglacial period, and this is where they found these three stone items. Now they're able to get a carbon 14 date of something like 18,000 years ago on a log, which is found within the stone, on this one, and let's see, what's the other one? And on the log down here, 38,000 years ago. Well, that looks pretty good. That gets more than 14,000 years left anyway, if we're here in an interglacial situation. But here's the problem. It's a sand deposit. Apparently, this sand is quite active. And sand, being made up largely of silica, is having exerted a grinding action on these three stone items. As a consequence, we can't definitely say that they're stone tools. Again, this could be another one of these constructs of nature. And with almost every one of these sites, there's something wrong. But if we get enough of them, we can start building some confidence. And finally, we're going to get a good one if they happen to exist. Sooner or later, we're going to get one. To my way of thinking, this is the best one yet. It happened, not this one, but the one in Alberta.
They had these three possible artifacts, and there were quite a few other ones over here, too. It looked initially like it was a campsite for group hunting. It looked pretty good. But the artifact type is one scraper, this sort of thing. Another is a plate tool, which has had chips knocked off it for cut purposes. In other words, very general and not too elaborate type of tool, but they are tools.
How far down did they have to go before they reached that point?
Oh, I'm not too sure. The point is that this is a glacial spot.
Yeah.
And this is a glacial. Apparently, another glacial. Yeah. Are the
mountains all the antelope of any species determined their ancestors? Or? Does it change too much about being written down over
the next period? No, can't do that. We had here's another situation too. And I offered to you for what it's worth, and make up your own mind about it. In Alberta, down near Lethbridge, back in 1961, there was a geological survey done along the riverbank. And a man named McStocker, who is one of Canada's foremost geologists, was taking samples
rock tablets and so forth, and he came across some scraps of bone, and he didn't recognize it as being a human being at the time. Pieces of a human being. And he bagged it up, and the stuff went back to Ottawa and sat in the lab for a while, and then the lab technician came along, picked up this bone, and realized that there were parts of the skeleton of a child about 2 years of age. A little bit of the skull, a little bit up around the shoulder region, and bits and pieces of two ribs. He knew that this material had come from glacial deposits, or from very old deposits at any rate. So he checked back and got a hold of McStocker again, and they rechecked the situation. And McStocker feels that he can locate the exact position where he found it. Now, this report came out last fall. Well, that's 1970. After 9 years, he's looking to find the exact spot where he found it. And they went back and took a look and pointed out the spot, and as luck would have it, they dropped carbon 14 dates again on wood material found in glacial till. And in this particular case, there are, I think, three glacial deposits like this. The bone material is found down here in a non glacial deposit. Now, this deposit, not at the locality where the bone was found, but a little ways down the river. They found wood again, sufficient amounts of wood that they managed again to get two radiocarbon dates. In this case, 32,000, and in another case, 38,000 radiocarbon. The bone is definitely a human child, no ways about that. These dates are good. The problem is, can a doctor reliably find that spot? Can he say that he can after all these years? He feels that he can. And if any of you, I think, have gone out in the bush and gone back to a place you visited perhaps 1 year before, and you're looking for something specific, I think most of you know how hard it is to find it, no matter how familiar you are with the region. But here's the possibility of error coming in again. On top of the fact that this bone sample has been sitting in a lab since 1961, and during this time, if you worked, some of you have worked in places to store materials, you know how things can get mislabeled. The very unfortunate part about this is that there isn't sufficient of that human bone to carry the parts of the baby. Just those bits and pieces of a child about 2 years old. And there's not enough total bone material there to yield a carbon 14 date. And that's really sad. Yeah.
So what's the fear of you now before you use the carbon?
Oh, in bulk about something like that. Say about pounds. I can get the exact figure, you know, if you want. Maybe. Now, we had a site out in Queen Charlotte, some close to home now, which is being excavated on now for, I think, something like 2 years. My notes right here. I didn't bring it. So I'll come up by memory. You have to invade about this. Jim knows more about the archaeology DC than I do. But in the Queen Charlotte situation, found a definite human habitation site. There's tools, there's no question about the being tools. There is a fireplace, apparently. There, last I heard, they're trying to accumulate enough charcoal on the fireplace to get a carbon 14 date. This means you can pick it up with tweezers. In this case, it's just little wee shreds of different pieces. But there is a glacial deposit overlying this place. Now, again, this means that, or this is what the geologist felt anyway, but this means that there's something over 12,000 years old. Now, until we get enough charcoal out of this place, we won't know for sure. There is a problem with this site, too, is that in the last few years, we suddenly discovered that there has been recent glacial activity up in that neck of the woods, say the Alaska Panhandle, He died traveling between Charlotte. And recently, 4,000 years ago, there hadn't been substantial glacial advance in this area. So it may be a recent glacial deposit. In other words, perhaps more than 4,000 years. It's part of the problem. So, as I say, we have these two current theories. I happen to subscribe to the one that holds that man got here more than 14,000 years ago. To me, there are enough of these three projectile points placed around, and they can't all be false. And as soon as we get a good date on them, I think we're going to have good evidence of man being here for much longer than 14,000 years. And as I say, it hinges strongly on our absence of these stone projectiles. Now, as to the good sites in deep sea, there are a fair number of sites on the order of gold from about 8,000-9,000 years ago until the present. There is a bit of gap from about 8,000-3,000 years ago, a little short sites in there. But just prior to this, say 8,000-10,000 years, there were a couple of good sites. Just after the period, 3,000 years up until now, it's quite good. So we're not too badly there. The chances of ever finding evidence of man being on this continent greater than, say, 12,000 years ago in D.C. are very small. Probably, as Arnie Palmer pointed out, if any area that's gone through glaciation, the chances of finding a site, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, in most cases, still have been destroyed or have been so altered that we'll never recognize them anyway. And as I mentioned in the Saskatoon site, you can see what a little bit of sand can do to the materials. You can imagine what a glacier will do to them, and it carries up to about 10% of its weight in rocks, and these rocks are constantly grinding against each other through the ice as it's moving. Any artifact caught up in this is just going to go through a mill. It's going to come out unrecognizable as an artifact. Chances are rather small here in Canada, which has gone through glaciation. This is why most of these sites are down in the States. The chances are much better down there because glaciation is confined to certain areas, primarily the high seas. So our best site today is the Yale site, a couple miles out of the town of Yale. And it has the earliest date that's arising upon that. It has cultural material on the order of about 9,000 years ago. Now, there is an earlier date associated with the Yale site, two dates, as a matter of fact, one about 11,000 years ago, and one about 11,500 years ago. Unfortunately, it seems to be on a level which does not contain cultural material. So the oldest dated cultural material I have record of is the 9,000 years ago at Yale BC. But again, at Yale BC, just a little ways away from Mississippi, there's actually a couple of sites there. Again, you have these rather crude-looking stone tools spread all over them. But they're on the surface, we can't take them. They are man implements. They've apparently been eroded out of some old horizon problem. And any wood and charcoal material is a long road. Okay, any comments? So you got two theories to choose from. Yeah.
How about all these reports of here that we read in papers about the people who like, can you tell us about the facts and what's going on reports in the
I suggest that any article that you read in the newspapers on archaeology, please be regarded as a little suspicious or be taken with a grain of salt. Some cases they're accurate. In other cases they're totally inaccurate. You wouldn't even know. Well, here's an example that I went through. We got a site, and one of the people that took part in the site went to work for the newspaper, and the site was reported in the newspaper. And in this report, they added on an extra zero or two to the time that they had. In this case, it's something on the order of 1500 years old. It wasn't very old, but and she added on an extra zero. And she knows just a simple little kill site. Apparently, it's a small band of engines that's surrounded by the low spot, I think it's a low pond there, and they kill it. One moment in time, one engine. And the way the article read, these people had slaves and chariots. And, it was wild. If I hadn't recognized the name and known that that's what she'd been doing that summer, I would have recognized that from the problem. And this is part of the problem, is that some people place their own interpretation on the situations, and there really was one of them. In other cases, it was just simple psychographic errors. For instance, an extra zero tacked on, or something like that. The type error may not think it's too important, but it may be a big shock to the public, or something like this. You know, throws everything out of context. There's a problem in archaeology that we cannot get sites printed fast enough. There's a backlog of material going into archaeological journals. As a consequence, an archaeologist may give a brief writing to the newspaper, a brief article, to get the news out as fast as possible. But again, there's always the possibility of typographical error to creep in. This is one of the reasons we like to go to conferences, because here you can get up-to-date information as rapidly as possible. But we do have this backlog of newspaper articles for our problem. Or can be a problem.
It's important that this niche has to during the work in Peru and still in the picture the target of the site of Peru. What kind of questions do the archaeologists would you ask of that kind of figure?
Well, first of all, we want to know how the data is done. And some of you watch articles in the newspaper for this. Is it a carbon 14 dating? Or is it just an estimation based on some geological features? Now, if it's a carbon 14 dating, it's going to be more accurate than an estimate on geological formation. In most cases. Now, you've got to watch the article and see just what it is. In most cases, they don't tell you what it is. It's just the site is named that such and such. And you don't know. It's part of the problem. I'm glad to hear that from McNeish because he is one of the, he has been one of Canada's foremost archaeologists for years. He is a very cautious man in his interpretation. And if he didn't mention how it was dating, I'm sure it would just be the newspaper error. And if McNeish says it seems to be in that order, I'm rather inclined to go along with him without knowing any more about it. But then again, it may be a typographical error. Until you get a hold of McNeish, you'll never know. But it'll turn up in some archaeological report, probably in a couple of years. Yeah?
Can you explain the mechanism of carbon dating?
It's based on the radioactive light of certain material. In the case of carbon 14, the cosmic rays coming through the atmosphere from the sun bombard nitrogen, and they convert nitrogen into carbon 14. And I think a byproduct of water, if I recall that. Now, this is a radioactive form, it's unstable, and it converts back into stable carbon as a regular procession of events. Protons and neutrons are the same. And after about the half-life of carbon was about 5,730 years. Now, as a dating technique, here's what happens. If you have a creature that's living thousands of years in the past, because it is a living creature, it's maintaining a balance with the radioactive carbon in the atmosphere. When this, because through its life process, eating, breathing, etc. Now, when this creature dies, this process stops, no longer taking on carbon 14. The carbon 14 that is in its body is converted back into a stable form. So this means that after 5,730 years has passed, that the death of the creature will have exactly one half of the original amount of radioactive carbon. Another 5,730 years, you'll have half of that. And of course, you can plot this all out. We used to use a Geiger counter to count the tick. The rate of conversion, for instance, can be calculated as number of ticks on the graph, the rate of tips, which is conversion of carbon 14 back to CO2. And in this case, mind you, there is a range of error of carbon 14 days. There's a statistical error, problems of contamination in some samples, not all. We're also relying heavily on an assumption which may not be too true, and that is that the amount of carbon 14 in the atmosphere is a constant over all these years. We now know the fact the period of now to about 2,500 years ago, we haven't seen all that constant and fluctuating. So we're adjusting our time or our ratios here accordingly. As a matter of fact, we talk about carbon 14 years rather than calendar years. At this stage of the game, precise calendar time isn't all that important. You can radiocarbon dating, you're pretty close to calendar time, that's sufficient for now, at any rate. Carbon 14 dating also has a limitation of about 50,000 years. By the time you get back 50,000 years, the sample 50,000 years old, it's not getting off any sick. The carbon 14 is just about all gone. And it has happened that some fluctuation in the solar radiation of today has caused the Geiger counter to tick. We're not counting the sample, we're counting what's happening outside. So it's done under very special conditions now. There is a method whereby the carbon can be enriched, but it's very expensive. And but with this method, we can extend carbon 14 dating back something like 80,000 years, you know, with the 90 years.
How do they
make
further back?
There are other radioactive methods. There's the death of argon, lead, thorium, and various other. Anything that, any material that's radioactive, mineral, radioactive can be utilized. We have some elements, which is the element, I guess, which have a very short radio carbon life, or pardon me, a very short radioactive life, and they can be used for short periods. But I should mention that there is a great gap in our dating techniques from about 50,000 years on back to about 500,000 years, for which we don't have any really good methods.
Is there any method or any way that this radio going off in some years, carbon can be stopped? You stop it
when your life process is stopped, then the intake of carbon 14 stops. So what you're doing is maintaining balance.
Right, well, you're saying the half-life of carbon you're measuring. Well, then that half-life it goes on in the dimension of this time goes on. Can you stop that aging process?
No.
Is there any way of stopping it dead?
For what purpose?
Well, for the purpose that if we can do it synthetically, that maybe it can be done naturally by nature.
I'm afraid I still don't quite grasp it. What are you stopping? The conversion of carbon 14 back to sea levels?
Right.
Intake of carbon 14.
Right. Like this person is now will die. And the conversion back to sea levels.
You want to stop that?
Right.
I don't know if we can or not. We haven't had a reason to try and do it. I can't think of why you want to do it unless you want to. Keep the sample so techniques get a little better.
I was just wondering if it could happen in the natural physics that we fall free data because of that. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not aware of any such happening. Okay, it looks like we're through for me.
If you have no more questions for Fraser, or perhaps you'd like to, do you have any time right now, please?
Sure.
Or in the talk to him, this will be fine.
We finally got our expert here again, so.
Great.
The guy can go in.
Yeah. Okay, that's the whole thing. Correct.
Well, I touched briefly on the ill, but I couldn't show up.
Both Jim and Fraser have assured me that if you want to take an archaeological or anthropological approach to your project, to turn paper, that feel free to come and see them. They put in extra time with it, but they've been very cooperative in these studies. And hopefully in the future, they'll be able to take a section or two of these studies from me. But they're so busy in doing their other work that there may be a little time before they're able to do that. Now, if you want to talk to Fraser about any problems or Jim, already had those of you who have other classes with good leave.